Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. Jack Dunn is CEO of Dimply and brings over 30 years of financial services and fintech experience backed by an MBA from Dublin Business School. Throughout her career, Jack has held senior roles at prestigious institutions including HSBC, Bank of New York, Bank of America and Confluence Technologies, where she held global positions and developed and executed transformative strategies. Her international perspective and diverse sector experience enable her to deliver innovative solutions and foster meaningful growth. Dimply is an innovative, no-code, no new generation customer experience platform designed specifically for financial services. It allows organizations to leverage any data source available to deliver hyper-personalized digital experiences, regardless of complexity and at scale. Jack brings a unique approach to business growth and relationship building. Her management philosophy centering on empowerment and a balanced focus on client and team needs sets her apart from the industry. Jack, you are very welcome to the podcast. I had to put my teeth back in there a second ago.
Thank you, Aidan. Great to be here.
Now, where will we start? I tell you where I want to start is, although you're not the founder of Dimply, you know, I get the sense from you, there's an entrepreneurial spirit there.
Absolutely, yeah. Always has been from a very young age. I suppose always thinking outside the box. If you think particular my background in financial services, it's such a diverse industry with so many different facets to it. I was always intrigued in how we can do better. What can we do differently in it? And likewise, as a child, pretty much the same. So always looking, as we might say, outside the box. And I suppose how that entrepreneurial side of things has brought me to where I am in Dimply is exactly that point, Aidan. So worked in the financial services industry, a wonderful career, backed by some amazing organisations, but was always massively challenged with the inability of technology to be able to do what it needed to do. For one, I guess the kind of straight through and result driven. And that orchestration of, you know, having technology do something rather than continually interfering with what I might say fat fingering. So where you've always got that manual and the risk associated with it. So I always had the artistic approach of being able to design what it needed to look like, but not the ability to be able to code it. So that's kind of where the entrepreneurial side came of thinking bigger. And then working with the right people that actually could design and build that and take it to where it needs to be.
Do you think entrepreneurship is gender dependent?
Well, that's a good question. No, I don't think it is at all. I don't think anything is, if I'm very honest with you. It really comes back to ability, drive, enthusiasm around things, being intrigued and pushing boundaries. It's always around pushing boundaries. And risk, obviously, you know, our appetite to risk. And we'll all vary regardless of what your demographic is. We'll differ. And also your circumstances differ as well. So my answer is no, I don't think it is. However, I will say, and maybe to my detriment, males tend to have that appetite to drive that little bit harder on the risk side of things. Whereas females, we tend to look all encompassing. So you would look from the A to Z of something. But no, I don't think so. And I think we're seeing a huge amount more of female entrepreneurs, really a lot more of female entrepreneurs, so much so on that side of things rather than seeing in the kind of the Fortune 500 rather than that. And I suppose some of we look across the industry and you see there's multiple advocate groups, you know, promoting females around being at the board tables of these large organisations. And I wonder, is that partly a drive of why we see such a rise in female entrepreneurs? Because, you know, they can make it in the kind of fintech or any other space outside of that kind of corporate world.
Do you feel a personal responsibility then to help others female entrepreneurs that are coming through the doors?
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. And I think that's something, you know, if I look back at my whole career, Aidan, I've always had somebody who's helped me, mm-hmm. whether it's been a family member, whether it's been a mentor in the workplace, or whether it was just my awareness of watching somebody else and taking the learning. I've always been a sponge. And it's something for me is really important, is paying back and paying forward. And if there's something any of us can do, that's exactly what we should be doing. Where can I help somebody on that? We're all climbing a ladder, mm-hmm. regardless of what you know step we're on it, in our personal life, in our work life, professional life. So absolutely, if we can lend a hand, we should be lending that hand. And also, what tends to happen is the hand you lend, you learn nearly more yourself in terms of doing that. So you see a female entrepreneur or a female or young entrepreneur that needs some help. And in fact, actually, there's a huge amount of learning you can take in that yourself too. So it's really two way.
I do think the Irish are naturally disposed to help people. Like, it is amazing, you know, the amount of entrepreneurs have come through and they've kind of gone, you know, I hit a roadblock, I got a name of somebody and I literally made a phone call and I didn't know them, but would they meet me for a coffee? And they say, you know, there's never been anybody who's turned me down.
Yeah. And I think that comes to trust. And in particular, Irish people, we have a foundation of trust. Yeah. Mm. So like if you trust somebody, you know, somebody puts their name behind it, you know, that's good. So that's one, I think, aspect of all of that massively helps. And somebody isn't going to put your name forward or introduce you to somebody unless they believed in it too. Mm-hmm. So that's the other aspect. And then, of course, the ball's in your own court. But you're right, we are predisposed to helping. Mm-hmm. As a nation and everything we do, it is about helping. Yeah. And I think in business in particular, and that's why mentorship and programs that we do volunteer our time freely as execs are very, very important, because it's helping others, as I say, climb that ladder. And even if it's not climbing the ladder, it might be a pitfall.
Yeah.
And that's what's
avoiding
also very
avoiding the
important.
Pitfall. Yes.
Absolutely. So yeah. how do you pivot away?
Avoid the snakes rather than climb the ladders.
That's exactly it. Years ago, Karen Peets, like a renowned business leader, was president of BNY Mellon when I was there, and she gave me such solid advice one day, and it was around how you pivot, how you move in a different direction from something, and it's just resonated, and I've used that multiple times for other people. So again, it's as I say, just paying forward some solid advice that can help somebody avoid the pitfall.
Yeah. When you look back and through your career, you've been in a few different organisations. How did you know when it was the right time to leave that role and move to the next one?
Interesting. So in the early days, my career obviously started in the UK. As you know, we moved back. Our daughter was born in 1994, Megan. We moved back, my husband and I, to Ireland. Dreadful time coming back to Ireland. In terms of like my career was really starting to get to places in the UK. So it was, I knew I was going to be taking a step back. Came back, took a little bit of time to find something, and then start working with Bank of Ireland Security Services. One of the best leaders I've ever worked for, Bob Craddock, who Bob took a punt on me. And I stayed with Bob for nearly 7 years. And actually how that move came was, I always had a hunger to learn and do something different. And like any large organisations, there's only certain roles that are open. Mm-hmm. But actually, one of my clients headhunted me, and that was Setanta Asset Management. And that's kind of how it happened. So the same thing about 7 years there with Dan O'Donovan, and also an excellent leader. Worked with Dan very closely and led his middle office for him. But again, came to a point of that business was getting to a stage of, OK, what's next for Jack? And Dan and I were working on looking at consolidating basically some of the custodians we were working with, so we can get some, you know, efficiencies. And during that process, that's how HSBC came about. So whilst I'm not saying there were all these knocks on the door, but the opportunities presented themselves, that there was a wider opportunity for me to explore. And that's really how it came about. And then the BNY Mellon actually came about. I had to take a small career break due to the health of one of my children. And as a female, that's always something you're concerned about, is how you get back on that ladder. And a wonderful mentor and still a true friend of mine today, Tim Murphy, actually took a punt on me then in BNY Mellon. And I went in to help actually establish their derivative clearing business. And that's how that came about. So it wasn't necessarily I was out looking for these. They came about, and actually why I'm in Dimpley today was Tim actually put my name forward to the investors that I'm somebody they should speak with. So it's kind of, when I go back to your question, Aidan, and think about how I am where I am today and how these organizations, the move in each occasion was something that was greater for me, something that was going to expand my horizon. And people often say to me, this stage of your career, why have you such a passion still to work so hard? I have the energy to do it, have the appetite to do it, and I'm actually still learning.
Yeah, and I think I say that to people every day. Like, you know, you need, when you're in a job, you need to be, every day is a school day, you need to learn something every day.
Absolutely.
And if you get to the point where you're not learning something, you're going backwards. It's not that you're never static, right? Yeah. You're either moving forward or moving backwards, you know?
Yeah. And what happens is then, you're right, what helps you get out of bed in the morning? Mm-hmm. What's driving you for that difference? And I'm not somebody that's the same thing day in, day out. I love diversity. Mm-hmm. That's why in regulation, so a lot of my career was in regulation. It was so challenged. So, and I loved it because you're pivoting all the time.
Yeah.
You're trying to think, what
bobbing
do you do
different? And weaving.
Exactly.
Now, the other part, of course, of your career, as you look at it now, is you've gone from working with big global companies to running your own show.
Yeah.
The pros and the cons.
Indeed, the pros and the cons. How long have we got? So working in large organisations, there's no question, frames you from... Okay, we've all had our education. I started doing AAT, so my background started in accounting and then moved into business and then obviously did my MBA. But there's nothing like the practical experience. They're just written, like, I'm not dissing education. It's pivotal. Mm. But there's nothing like the practice in an organisation. And I think it's the characters, I will say, as well. So there's huge learning from understanding how corporate boards work and being part of those boards, because obviously I sat on some of the boards. There's rigor, there's risk, there's control, there's governance, all essential and really, really important. But to navigate through that is like the red tape can kind of take forever. And sometimes the frustration born out of that is, you know, time doesn't stand still and decisions need to be made quickly. And you may not have a voice strong enough that allows that decision to be made. And then maybe it's a missed opportunity or perhaps a risk that's been saved. What I see in terms of smaller organisations. So, Aidan, first of all, let me say, if you asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have said, I think I'm made to be part of large organisations. They framed me. And I think now going back into a large organisation would be a challenge. So in a smaller organisation, whether I'm leading it or not, is you can be agile. I think it's really what's key here. And again, you've got to pivot. So you understand your market fit. You understand the markets that you're, you know, framing to position your product. You might have to, because of some headwinds, make a change. Myself and my leadership team, we can make that overnight or we can make it on the spot. Once, obviously, we've done the risk assessment and it makes sense. Where in a large organisation, that could take months. Mm. Literally, that could actually take months because the rigidity around not making a change, or we've set the vision or we've set the strategy and, you know, it's bolted down. So that's one, I think, key thing. But what you have to make sure you do in the smaller is make sure you adhere to the controls that you have in place and the risk frameworks. The other is around, it's really important in my view, and this, others have different views, but it is important to have some fun in what you're doing as well and really want to do it and have a passion to work hard. So I've got an ethos that my own team right now will be like, Jack, I can't believe you're saying this, but I do believe you work hard 80%. We work, give it everything for 80%. That 20 needs to be that, you know, strategic thinking, that horizon, what we need to do. Dimply right now, it's like we all have our sleeves rolled up. Everybody's doing everything, but we know we need to get to the 80-20. And in a corporate, you don't necessarily have that. You know, it's driven of where you need to be, what you need to do, and it's measured very meticulously in terms of that. And in most cases, you can't pivot. So having the ability to pivot in a way that, great if it's successful, but also if there's a huge learning in if that pivot was not necessarily the right thing. Yeah. But I think with my background, the background of my own leadership team I have with me as well, is we've fantastic experience that we're very confident in any pivot we will do will be the right thing for the business.
But you can also, the benefit too of a smaller company, you can see the end goal much clearer, right? You're not going through, you know, like that idea of the butterfly flaps its wings. You will have an impact if you flap your wings, but if you're in a big organization, it might dissipate out very, very quickly and there's no impact.
You know? And the other thing, and you're right, and the other thing is about that visibility in a large organization. So you have the company town halls and you're part of, you know, some of those senior teams, but there's a component that you don't always have that awareness. You don't always have that knowledge. So slightly flying solo, and that's where I talked earlier about trust. Of course, you're always going to trust the leadership of an organization, but if there isn't transparency, and I think that's really key, if you don't really understand as a senior leader what the end goal is, then it is very difficult, regardless of the goals that have been cascaded, for you to achieve those. Whereas in Dimply, it's very clear what our 3-5 year horizon is, very clear. And any pivot, it's, you know, assessed the impact it has on that. And then we agree and sign off on that if that is the case. And then we'll, you know, continue on that journey. But point being there is there's transparency. Which is key.
Okay. Scale in a business means you've got to wear a lot of different hats, right? And no person has the ability to wear all the hats that are required, even if they're the best CEO out there. So what does that mean when you've gone into this position in terms of assessing the needs, the skills needs that you've got for your executive team?
Great question. In terms of, first of all, understanding the strategy around the scaling, okay, so have you got the right product? Has it got the market fit? What markets do we want to go into? Have we got an operating model that fits? Have we got a financial model that supports what I'm trying to do? And then critical to all of that, is it underpinned by the right people? And so what I tend to do, and this came from years and years ago, so I can't claim this was my idea. One of my bosses gave me a framework, and he said, I want you to lead this team. This was back in the UK, back in the late 80s. But I want you to draw from me. So back then we didn't have the computers or the software that would help us design anything that would be an org structure. And he said, draw on a piece of paper what you need, the skills you need, and then tell me that team that you're inheriting, have they got those skills? So I tend to now, in any organization I go to, Aidan, I take a blank page and blank boxes. So I need a head of people. I need a head of technology. So what's the skills I need to do what I'm trying to drive from a strategy perspective, and then do an assessment of, one, an assessment of understanding the people, and secondly, then understanding their HR file. So have they got that drive, that capability and that background that can do that? So key in all of that is understanding, I call it like the wheel. You know, the wheel evolves only if we have all the right cogs in it. And have I got all the right cogs? And I'm very confident to say within Dimply, we have all the right people. We do need to hire one other key person, which we're looking to hire at the moment. So that's, we know we had a gap and we've identified that gap and we're in the hiring process. And the other aspect then of knowing you have the right people that can drive that strategy, agree with your vision and come on that journey, is how you measure that. So I think it's really, really important in the metrics around, you know, okay, we're not just saying it, let's
do it.
Let's do it, but also let's evidence it with our internal data. So that's something we weren't wonderful at last year. And now we've started with a really good cadence around transparency of where we are. So back to the real question really around scaling. For me, it's the financial model, it's the team, it's the skills in that team, it's the tools we're using. Are we using the right tools? Is the product where it needs to be? And we did a lot of work last year when I came in, did an initial assessment. And likewise on the team, have we got the right people? Are they sitting in the right seats? So kind of bums on seats, I would call it. And in any kind of scale up, as you know, it's sleeves rolled up and you're wearing multiple hats, as you mentioned. So it's not only the CEO that's wearing multiple hats, others are. They may not be fully equipped to do that. It's my job to make sure they have the tools to do it. So I'm tasking them with something, with an objective. I need to make sure I'm giving them the tools that they can succeed. So that can be challenging when you're trying to grow, transform and lead a business in terms of making sure that you're doing the right thing by people as well. So call it kind of plates in the air, and then assessing those plates and making sure you're aware of any plate that's looking like it's about to drop. And what you're going to do for that. So it's having the foresight to have a holistic view at every level, top, middle, and on the ground.
It probably doesn't quite yet apply to the Dimpley situation, but when you look at your previous roles, would you have a preference for hiring talent or developing within?
So absolutely, I was a huge fan in all of my last roles of developing within, providing that career trajectory and that career path that people could see. And I remember once in my BMI Mellon days, I remember once one person saying to me, and it was a very large lesson for me, Aidan, for them to say, you know, you're a mum of three, you got to this stage in your career. They were about to embrace getting married, about to embrace starting a family, etc. And her exact words to me were, I don't want to be you. But why she didn't want to be me was the hours I worked. Mm. So I promoted work-life balance all the time, but I was the worst example of it, absolute worst example. So it's like everything.
The cobbler's children have no shoes.
exactly right. So I had a big lesson in that was, okay, yeah. So whilst I say it, I'm not promoting it in my doing.
Yeah.
And the point being there is, if she hadn't said that to me, I didn't have that awareness. So my behaviours basically were a distractor for others wanting to get to the C-level of large organisations. So it really made me think about their career paths and how to get there. So then I started doing some like lunch and learns, making sure that people understood why I was doing the hours I did, because we were establishing a whole new business in a very, very, very established business, but this one wasn't. So it meant kind of grinding exceptional hours. But it is for me around providing that visibility that somebody has the ability to climb that ladder, whatever the ladder is. They might want to, you know, they might want to go sideways, horizontal or vertical. But again, making sure that there is that ability if they so wish, because we can't have everybody leaders, nor can we have everybody, you know, at a level. There's all components that there's a skill for that team that's required for it to, you know, achieve. And likewise, at certain levels in a company, change is good. Mm. So you need to rotate at different management and leadership roles and provide that by one example. And secondly, by advocating that there is that possibility to get there, because otherwise you'll train wonderful people and you lose them.
They'll walk out the door.
They'll walk because there isn't the opportunity for them to expand.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. I've seen that in my career. Some exceptional people that we just couldn't provide what they needed, and we lost them. But the situation was, you know, there's no regrets on it because you just didn't have the opportunity that they needed. Mm. But I think we also as leaders need to have the foresight that they don't come looking for it, that you know your people.
Yeah.
It's very, like we talk about knowing our clients.
Yeah.
You got to know the internal client first, and all your people are those.
Yeah.
Got to know those first to understand, okay, what can we do? And then be transparent. If you can't give them that career, like right now in Dimpley, everybody's very clear we're scaling. We're small, we're starting to scale. You know, we'll hopefully ramp up quite quickly, depending on growth and on the markets. That might mean we need to start running before we jog, as everybody on that journey, right? So it might mean more rolling up our sleeves. And likewise, anybody we will bring in, we've been transparent, letting them know, okay,
you're hitting the ground running.
That's right. You know,
there's no honeymoon period here.
That's it. And again, if you do that and they're buying into that, they know. But if they come in and you don't do that, then you're not going to retain those people.
Developing a culture from the ground up versus managing one in a big organisation, right? Tell me your mindset on that.
Yeah. Well, culture, first of all, is really, really important. So that's one of the very first things I did when I came into Dimpley was, first of all, try to assess what the culture was, and then looked, and we were in a very young stage, so in a great stage to actually put a stamp on a new culture. And we actually came together as the full team, the global team, and we came together that everybody had an input. So we actually worked together in a room, some virtually, some in the room, and everybody kind of pulled post-it notes together of like who the felt we should be, what we are, what we need to be, and really what is the culture we want to embody. And we're so proud with what we've created in terms of, because that's the DNA of all of us, including me, that we actually have designed and shared that on our website. So it's available for anybody. So it's our cultural handbook. And we actually live by that. So when we start to see we're pivoting from that, or if there's something that's kind of derailing us, we bring ourselves back to the grounded of, OK, we believed in this. We set this. This is our course. And this is the culture that we want to embody on a daily basis. So when you're in a large organization, and of course Dimply will go through iterations of its culture as it starts expanding, is that culture, what's presented as the culture when you're in the bones of that organization, in some cases is actually not the culture, because there's multiple little cultures that embody the larger culture. So the question is around, for me, it's staying true to your culture, dusting it off, that you remember what it is, right? Mm-hmm. You're living it. But you're living in a way that is transparent to your clients and your prospects as well. So they see that. It's not just something written on a piece of paper. And then be mindful of when you need to start adjusting it, that you can adjust it. So be big enough to say, okay, that was good at this point, but we need to relook at this.
We're a bigger organisation. Yeah. We're a different organisation. Yeah, we've grown and it needs to grow.
Yeah, and it needs to grow as well. Yeah. So we all signed off, and we literally signed off on our culture within Dimply. And as I say, it's in our everyday, and it's on our website, visible for anybody to look at. That's how comfortable we are with that. But it is about everybody has a voice. Everybody is important, and we can't do our jobs without all of us. So everybody plays an integral part in that wheel I talked about that's turning. One of those cogs is not where it needs to be, then that impacts. Mm. And knowing that and understanding that is what's going to be key.
Casting your mind back to the previous organisations that you worked with, all big global organisations.
Yeah.
Do you think global companies can have one corporate culture?
No. I really
don't. But they do think they. So many of them think they do.
Oh, they do. Yeah. So of course, and that was my point when I mentioned earlier when we talked about, you might be sitting at that very senior level and you're nodding your head to yes, you know, because that's the corporate. But in fact, actually, you know, on the ground, there's probably 30 other versions of a culture that's manifested, and that's how it is. So that's really how, when you're in a small organization leading a small team, as the CEO, you have hands-on proof that we're starting to pivot. So that is not really the culture, and you can take action. Whereas when you become very large, and I understand the challenges in that as well, is that sometimes you really don't want to hear what's been said, and you still believe fully in the culture that you maybe as a senior leader have set, and that's therein where I think you get. I don't know what's the right word to call it. I don't like saying politics, but when you divide within an organization, and when that starts, that's when you're in trouble. Yeah. That's exactly
when the foundation crumbles quickly.
Totally. And if the foundation's not solid, no matter what you build on top of that, there'll be cracks here and there. So I guess my background in all of these wonderful organizations has been fantastic. But some of the learnings from that I can take into how I make sure that we keep a very solid foundation within Dimply. And as we continue to layer, that those layers are equally as solid, and have the team around me that, one, I trust, two, that I give them a voice that they can tell me, Jack, you're wrong. Jack, that's not right. So the way we're going there is really going to impact our culture. Say, for example, we're entering a new jurisdiction and I decide to do something quite different. And the team, I have to listen to the team, because I've put them in that place because they're trusted, experienced individuals. Mm. And we'll collectively agree or disagree. And I might have to overpower or overrule and say, no, this is what I think is the right thing, and this is the movement we're going to take. But I have to have done that analysis of the impact it'll have. Yeah. So it's around listening. My dad, bless him, always said, and I know it's a real old Irish saying, that we all have, you know, two ears
and one mouth.
Use them in moderation. Yeah. And it is true. As leaders, we have to listen more. Mm. And do we? And sometimes perhaps not. So that's, I think, why, you know, back to the question around the larger versus the smaller. And all of these largers were smaller. That's the reality.
That's it.
So it's having a senior leadership team that can really keep their ear to the ground to understand, okay, what do we need to do to make sure we're hearing our people?
Mm. What do you think is the what personal characteristic do you think is most important for a CEO?
Personal characteristic. Wow. There you go. You caught me on that one, Aidan. There's a few, but I think, really think the primary one, as I've just concluded on, is around listening, having an ability to actually hear people. So not just hear it, listen, consume it,
and take action as a result.
And then take the action on it. But you know, as any leader, you've got to be a role model, and that's it. So what you say, you got to do, okay? And if you're not doing it, so for me, it's around evidence. So it's the transparency around, okay, this is what we're doing, and then evidencing it. And if you change course, you know, being that transformative leader, because that's kind of what I am right now, is being able to explain why I've had to pivot, and not be afraid to explain that. So the CEO role can be very lonely sometimes.
They say the CEO is the one that casts the longest shadow, you know?
Yeah, and it can be very lonely, but lonely in a way that you allow it to be, right? So I again, I'm learning, as I said at the start. This is my first CEO role, and delighted to be in it. But obviously, I've been in C-level positions for a number of years. It is, though, in that leadership around taking ownership of my position. Ownership to the stakeholders, responsibility to the stakeholders, the investors, and ensuring that we're doing right by them. So what does that mean in terms of the traits of a CEO is exactly that transparency to everybody involved in that ecosystem and setting the course, staying the course. And if you have to pivot from the course, is explaining why. So to me, communication, transparency, and I guess that equity in my belief of equity around everybody involved in that ecosystem is treated fairly.
There is an idea, and it'll be interesting, you know, as you say, this is your first CEO role, but having talked to a lot of them over the years, I definitely come to the conclusion that you don't necessarily get better at the job, but you get quicker at making the important decisions.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
And that's the key. That's what differentiates a really good CEO.
Yeah.
They don't dwell on stuff. They make the decision, they move. Yeah, they make the decision,
that's right.
They move.
That's right. And actually, when you say that, Aidan, that's important. That's something I pride myself in, being able to make a decision quickly. And when I came into Dimpli and doing that, probably was a slight adjustment for some of my leadership team to see that we could make a decision so quickly, you know, in terms of the assessment done so quickly and make the decision. And thankfully, our decisions to date have been the right decisions, and they can see the benefit. But like time, you know, as we say, an old colleague of mine and good friend, Terence Faherty, always said time kills deals. And it is so true. So like time is so precious in every way around, you know, wasting it, using it wisely, but also making decisions. So it is key to be like, what's your priorities? Focus on those. Focus is another key word I use. You know, our time and our focus is essential. That'll help us make the right decisions. And if it doesn't, then we have to see, okay, what did we do differently, or what did we do wrong in that decision making?
Yeah. When we think about Dimpli now, you know, what is the growth profile of the business from here? And what's the route to market?
Yeah. So we're blessed in terms of our presence here in the Irish market, working very closely with a couple of very renowned tier one organisations. Who are huge advocates and supporters and opening doors for us elsewhere. Dimpli is a product that can work anywhere in financial services. So obviously we want to take it global. We've got a very strong pipeline in the UK, the US, and also in the Middle East. Really, really important that we make the right decisions in where those entities that we set up are. So we've established our US entity. We're in pilot stage with four organizations across the globe where we are testing how that will work for them. That takes time. And obviously, you know, time, as we say, is very important and very precious at the stage we are in our business. So it's around making those critical decisions of where we spend our time, because obviously the cost of time is important. So we see the growth is continuing, obviously growing in Ireland. And again, we have a couple of very strong prospects and pilots here that we're working through and hopefully closing those out in the first quarter of this year, moving to legal contracts. And then we have workshops actually in the coming weeks in the UK, some very strong prospects working through in the Middle East, which is all of February. And then two very promising prospects that we're working in the US. What the challenge, I guess, for Dimpli is working on all of that simultaneous, okay, and finding what is the right one that we can move on and move on at a pace that, one, we continue growing ourselves, we continue offering exceptional service, and that's what we want to do. but also that it supports our 3 to 5 year strategy. So it gets us where we need to get to. So it's not following cash. It's following the right thing that builds a strategy that becomes that all-encompassing, hyper-personalized customer experience platform that product teams around the globe can actually use seamlessly. So we don't want to lose sight of that. And that's what's also important in doing that. So they're the order of where we are right now. So trying to do those three jurisdictions simultaneous, they'll come at different stages. But in essence, this year, we are looking to at least triple our client base and hopefully more. And with the prospects we're currently working on in pilot stage, we're on target for achieving that.
Okay. There is that idea out there that with success comes the risk of distraction. And as you start going through this, right, as you get more money, you kind of decide to branch out into either other markets or other things like that. So, as you sit as the CEO, how do you think you're going to manage that and make sure it doesn't happen?
As we said, Dimply supports financial services and are primed to support it. But in essence, it can support any organization that needs hyper-personalization. So once we have available data, we can orchestrate that in a way. So our 5 year plus strategy is absolutely, we look at retail, we look at airlines, there's multiple others, the health sector, the education sector, there's multiple others that we can look at. But what we're starting to see, for example, the credit unions is a prime example in Ireland where, you know, Dimply could be a huge supporter. And we're working through multiple facets there. But the Credit Unions Alliance Group are looking at financial literacy. So they're working with us in terms of, could Dimply support doing that? Now, you might think, OK, is that a pivot away from financial services? Because it's the financial literacy. So it's education, it's insights. That's a huge part of Dimply, that we make sure that people are making the right informed decisions. So that's not a pivot away from our strategy. In fact, actually,
it's an augmentation.
Augmentation. So you may not be providing a hyper personalized experience for somebody to make the right next mortgage decision, but you could be educating somebody who really doesn't understand the construct of a mortgage. So again, that's, you could say it's augmenting. So for me, it's around, unless that next pivot is something that's going to move a needle significantly, we stay the course. Mm. So the course is financial services with the view of others after that.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the key things you talk about within structure is the balanced approach to client and team needs, right?
Yeah.
How does that work in practice?
Yeah, that's a tough one to balance right now because, as I said, we're a small team, a very proficient, experienced small team. So again, rolling those sleeves up mean you have some people working longer hours, working harder hours because they see the value. They've built a trusted partnership. AIB Life is a prime example. Brian O'Connor, Kieran O'Connor, and others in that organisation. I feel like, Aidan, I'm working with these guys for 20 years. Mm. I'm working with them for 10 months. So that's the reality of a trusted relationship. So our team will always go the extra mile for something that our existing client base want to do differently. But we go that extra mile because we know it can have benefit to the wider ecosystem. So when you look at their strategy, it's around being a digital disruptor. We're going on that journey with them. They're promoting us to their other counterparts to be that digital disruptor. So the balance there is, okay, we might be pushing hard, but we know it's for a wider benefit. So the balance is, okay, we get to do something different with that client that actually is something we can not necessarily rinse and repeat. That's the wrong way to describe it. But the wider financial services organization can benefit. Right. So that's a balance that we're happy to go the extra mile because it'll make a difference. But that's where we make sure that we do understand what we're trying to do. So it's not the next shiny object, for, again, a want of a better word. It's where you're looking at, is it going to make a difference? Does it make a difference to the strategy, to the ecosystem we're part of? And also then looking at the benefits to the company and the individual. So do you want burnout? Absolutely not. So we've got to make sure we have the right mix of people that can deliver on what it is we're agreeing to. So we take extreme caution in the scope of work that we're signing up to. What kind of people do we need? Have we got the skills? Do we need to hire more? And then we've really strong partnerships with organizations that we can augment very quickly. So we can bring in more people very, very quickly if we need be. So the balance is really around understanding the need, understanding our own capability and the timeline in terms of the delivery. So a long way around answering the question is sometimes, again, you have to pivot, but in a way that you know it's for a greater good for everybody involved.
How important is it for your capital and your capital investors to be aligned with you as the CEO and your goals for the company?
Oh, very much so. I think it's very much so. And we're really lucky. We have an amazing board and an amazing set of investors that really believe in the strategy, like very much so believe in it. So much so, Aidan, we've just gone for another round. We've gone for a bridge round just before Christmas. We're just about to close and we had all investors come back in. So they truly believe in the product, believe in the strategy, believe in where we're taking it. Obviously want us to move fast and rightly so, and are with us. I would say absolutely with us on the journey.
And then you mentioned the board as well. So how do you manage the board and investors maybe when things aren't going well? It's easy when things are ticking the box and everything looks lovely.
Yeah, you know? Again, comes back to transparency. You know, there shouldn't be any secrets. The CEO has the role of running the business on a day to day and then reporting through to the board. So, you know, you set the strategy, set the vision, identify what the initiatives are that you're going to do to deliver on that, and then measurement. So it's that measurement that's the transparency. So if that starts to move, to be held accountable for that move. Thankfully, we haven't had to do that. And hopefully this year we won't have to do that. But again, it'll come through clear communication of, okay, we thought this will work. The other thing I suppose to take into consideration, and this isn't unique to Dimples, any organisation, is when budgets are set and a budget is set for digital or set for innovation, and Dimples will form part of that. If there's organization making some cost cuts, one of the key areas will be, most likely, as we all know, tends to be people. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing is what technology can we do it out, or what new vendor can we do it out? Yeah. So when I look at our forecast in our funnel and pipeline and the timeline around closing some of these deals, there's a component of that outside of my control, but also there's a component where I can really influence. So it's staying true to that with the board. So timelines that I've committed to, if I see anything there that's pivoting or anything that's going to cause a delay in that, is not blindsiding anybody.
Get out in front of it.
Absolutely in front of it. And that's any advice I would give to anybody. If you see a risk, see anything that's a potential, do not delay on it. If your gut is telling you there is something here, call it out, manage it, put a plan in place to de-risk it. And work.
Because you also never know if there's a solution that the board have that
Absolutely.
Might be able to help you with that you're just not seeing at that
that's
moment
exactly
in time.
That's exactly right. And we have a board that's what they do. You know, we have a board opening doors for us in terms of new prospects. We have a board that will challenge me in some, and that's what I want. I want to be challenged too, because I don't have all the answers in terms of doing that. But I do have a board that trusts me, and that's really, really important. So the board hired me and they really trust me. And going back in on this new bridge round, is the board are fully behind me. So it's been evident there that the board and investors are behind the strategy, the vision, and where we're going to take it. So it's execution mode now, and that's the reality. So it's just it's make it happen and take it to the next level. There are the plans.
How do you deal with setbacks?
Setbacks. I can think on my feet very quickly, which is great. And in most cases, I can see it coming. Again, so that comes back to that whole kind of my early days of kind of my accounting background, you know, figures, numbers, understanding where we are and assessing it is very important. It really is about understanding what's the setback. Okay, how, again, coming back, I'm using this word a lot today, actually. How do we pivot? So what do I do to pivot? And there shouldn't be a surprise. So if the setback comes at a stage that it's like a major challenge, then I've done something really wrong. So my reporting isn't accurate enough for my
never
or
bet
my
the
ear.
Ranch, I suppose, yeah. is the key to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My ear isn't to the ground the way it is. So really, you tackle it. You understand, okay, what do I do to, you know, what are the cones or the pillars I need to adjust to get back on track? Or do I really need to think differently? So is my thinking all wrong here? So challenging myself as well. I do a huge amount of whiteboarding. Right. So there's an artist in me as well. I did art through my career as well. So there's a real part of that I challenge my own thinking of, okay, is this right? You know, am I clouded? Am I thinking short term and not thinking the long term? And that whiteboard stays pretty much, you know,
full
at most times. And then I color code it.
Right.
So color code in terms of red, amber, green.
Yeah.
And that helps me on that. So I think just back to answering the question, sorry, I deviated slightly, around setbacks is understanding what the setback is. And my job then is, okay, to resolve it, put the pillars in place to basically put a resolution to get back on track.
Do you obsess about the small things?
Interesting. I don't obsess about small things, but small things are a huge part in the bigger thing, right? So back to when we talked about foundation earlier. So what I obsess about is the small things that might be simple in somebody's eye, like a reporting. If that reporting is missed, and it might seem simple, that has a significant, could have a significant impact somewhere up the chain of a decision that's been made. So I obsess around things that influence the bigger things. So whether they're small or not, but they play a part in what I call that ecosystem or that chain. And if a link is broken, the chain. I do obsess around what we say and if what we say we don't do. I obsess around the analysis why that happened and hold people accountable. Accountability is key. So it might
and
be
is that transparency question again ultimately to your customer?
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. You say something to your customer, you're going to do this. And my word is I'm an ambassador for Dimply, but I'm also a personal ambassador. And our parents thought us at a young age, your name is really, really important to you. And I say the same to my team, and I've said it to my teams in the past. So it's your badge of honor type thing. So if I say something, I need to deliver on it. And in delivering on that is if I have to sweat some small stuff to do it, then I need to do that to get to it. But then you've done it and that's you've built it and you move on from it. So sometimes we think small stuff, but actually small stuff can really play an integral part to the composition, I guess, of the bigger. Yeah. Of the bigger.
Do you hate losing or love winning?
Oh. That's a wonderful question. I have three children who are all at high level basketball and played internationally, and a husband that's massively competitive. So yes, I don't like losing is the reality, and I love winning. Mm. So in business, though, when you look at that, when I look at the winning is achieving. So when you set out to do something, or the winning is when that pilot turns into a contract. And the losing is, let me take the learning. So what did we do wrong to win on the next one? Yeah, of course, it hits my gut and you're thinking, oh, we could have done better. But we learn from the losing. Now, thankfully, haven't lost yet in Dimply, and I hope we don't. But I've lost in others. So you have a deal that you're about to sign and last minute, 11th hour. It's like, what the hell? How did we miss that? And take the learning from it. But that learning frames not happening again. But in general, yes, I am the winner. I want to be the winner. And there's not that there's no room for losing. Of course there's room, but take the learning in
out of it. Yeah, ultimately learn more from your setback or from your losses than you'll ever
Absolutely.
Do from your wins. You know?
Oh, my career to date and where I am and some of the things I excel in is because I made a mistake or I failed at it previously and I just dusted myself off and thought, what do I need to do to get myself right back to what it should be? And as I said at the start, when we spoke about some of the really strong leaders I had in the past, is what I learned from them was that resilience, that agility, that you don't know everything and you need a team around you that does, and you learn from them as well. So
you mentioned your three children, so what advice would you give to young people today
in terms of career advice,
anything, life advice?
Life advice is be absolutely true to yourself, very true to yourself. Understand who you are, what you want to be. I don't think, Aidan, at a young age I understood who I was or what I wanted to be. I followed, you know, there was a hunger to be different kind of thing, but did I really understand? And be authentic. Authentic is key. Honestly, I don't know if I'd like to be growing up in society today, like if you know me 30 years ago or maybe 35 years ago. I think it would be very different. So authentic to yourself, challenge yourself, break down boundaries, and always plan. So goals and planning. Set yourself a metric you want to achieve and measure it. So don't say, I'm going to run the marathon in a month's time and take out the trainers today. You know, the same thing, and if I want to have this home in however many years. So when I mentor people, that's what I do. draw it out. Look at the 5 years, what you need to do and how you need to get there. So,
and be realistic.
Absolutely realistic, yeah. But also push.
Yeah.
So if I want to do this, how do I do it? If I want to have £1 million house in 5 years, how am I going to have it?
Yeah.
You're not going to have it if you're, you know, if you're a graduate right now and no plan on a career. So like work backwards from, and then be realistic. Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. And in the same way then, you know, who have you or who do you seek advice from?
So I have a wonderful siblings. I've got three siblings that are incredible and very successful business-wise as well. They're always there if ever needed. I mentioned to you a couple of names that I've worked with in the past. So they're mentors that if I need to call on, no question about it. And they are, you know, as I said, previous CEOs and leaders. And sometimes I call on myself, a little bit of meditation and really like, right, think about what you've just done there or think about what you just said. Would you redo it? Think about in the last year where something just you felt you went a little bit too far on and reflect on it. So sometimes a little bit of meditation helping me and understand, okay, I should have done differently. And then, as I said, my existing board, there's a couple of key people on that board. That honestly, and you would have seen on LinkedIn over the last year in particular, John Purdy has been exceptional. So he's in the background if I need him, but he, you know, he's got phenomenal backgrounds. Jerry Hassett, there's others, names that I know if I need to pick the phone up, I can.
Yeah.
And that will every now and again just check in with me, say, you know, we're here if you need. And I think that's advice I would give to younger people as well, is you have a network around you.
Your personal network's crucial.
It's crucial. And I don't know if I understood that at a young age. I think at a young age, I thought I should know this.
Yeah.
And I'd be going researching everywhere instead of asking somebody who had the answer. So maybe that's, if I could retract or maybe add to my answer earlier, is exactly that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a network of people around us that sometimes we are too embarrassed to ask because we think we should know. You're not, because they're learning and you're asking as well.
And Google isn't the source of all answers.
Absolutely not.
We've come to the final question time. Here's the black book is opening up and we'll have to wait and see. All right. This is a good one.
Oh, be easy on me.
If you won the lotto, would you quit?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I can categorize, you know, it's funny, I thought Aidan, when you said to me earlier there's a question you're going to read at the end that I'm not going to know what it is, and I thought, oh my goodness, no, because I said about 20 odd years ago, when I'm 55 I'm going to retire. I am now 55 and I am not anywhere close to retiring, and the reason being I still have so much to give, I have so much to learn, and I don't know what I'd do with myself if I wasn't working, if I wasn't paying forward, if I wasn't working with these amazing clients that have innovative ideas and we have the technology can help them do that and challenge myself. So no.
While you can still see the destination, you still want to go for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's the key, isn't it?
Now, funny, if you ask me in 5 years' time, if I want, I'm sure that's a whole different question. But right now, the stage we are with Dimply, the stage I am with Dimply when we're taking it, is my children would massively benefit from the lotto, I'm sure. But Mama would continue working.
Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Jack Dunn. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and we'll see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning, the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.